Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlossophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlossophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I'm your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Nostalgic Riley.
Oh, I am so nostalgic right now.
And Spencer Magical Williams.
I just hate you so much right now, and nobody knows why.
I know why.
We got a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about... it is late.
We just
got back from the theater, and we are doing this episode on Christopher Robin. So before we lose control of this ship, I'm going to pass it over to Chad to give you a little bit of info before.
Oh, man, it already happened. Deep in the 100-acre wood, The Filmlossophers is brought to you with much delight by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Whenever you've run out of honey in the cupboard, we're just a click away. Subscribe to The Filmlossophers on your favorite streaming platform to get access to new episodes each Wednesday morning on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
If your top is made out of rubber and your bottom is made out of spring, you really should see a doctor. That doesn't sound good at all. But don't let that stop you from having fun while you're alive with us on social media. Any day of the week you want. Like our page on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlossophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlossophy101.
Yep.
Even when it's a rainy day and you feel like the sky is always falling, things can always look up. Just take a listen to our episode.
That was very PBS of you. That was very nice. I liked it. Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Go ahead, continue.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. You'll hear loads of mistakes and turned...
See, this is what happens when Eddie interrupts the flow of the sentence. It doesn't make sense.
No, I'm so lost. Hey, visit our episode archives. We have a website, filmlossophers.com.
That's right. We got a website. You know what?
Boy.
Can I just take a second to say, you know...
It has begun.
These late night episodes just really add a little bit of flavor to these shows.
Flavor? It's like something reused or refried. It's just not good.
It's delirium.
Yeah, that's what it really is. It's good for nobody.
Well, speaking of delirium, we're going to go ahead and jump right into this movie review as we discuss the upcoming film, Christopher Robin. So, unless you've been living under a rock for the last, 40 years?
Something like that.
You have had to have at least heard about Winnie the Pooh and his friends, or the young boy with the great imagination and the 100-acre wood expeditions and whatnot. So... this movie kind of plays on that a little bit. So before we jump into it, Chad, why don't you give us a little bit of that official synopsis goodness?
I'd love to. Christopher Robin is stuck in a job. So Christopher Robin is an adult now. Should just point that out. He's stuck in a job where he is overworked, underpaid, and facing an uncertain future. He has a family of his own, but his work has become his life, leaving little time for his wife and daughter. And he has all but forgotten his idyllic childhood spent with a simple-minded, honey-loving stuffed bear and his friends. But when he's reunited with Winnie the Pooh, like this is the Eeyore part of the song, but you know, when he's reunited with Winnie the Pooh, now tattered and soiled from years of hugs and play, a spark is rekindled and he is reminded of the endless days of his childlike wonder and make-believe that defined his youth when doing nothing could be considered something. Following an unfortunate mishap with Christopher Robin's briefcase, Pooh and the rest of the gang, including Piglet, Eeyore, and Tigger, step out of the forest and into London to return the crucial possessions, because best friends will always be there for you.
That's right. Directed by Mark Forster, the most odd choice for this particular film, but the film stars Ewan McGregor as the titular character alongside Hayley Atwell, as well as the voices of Jim Cummings and Brad Garrett. So if you're not too familiar with those two voice actors, obviously Most people have heard of Ewan McGregor. Haley Atwell played Agent Peggy Carter in the Captain America films, as well as the Agent Carter TV series.
Yep.
Jim Cummings and Brad Garrett. So Brad Garrett was the older brother to Raymond, and Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yep.
Jim Cummings, however, is a phenomenon all on his own. The man has voiced, so many different characters over the last...
Eddie's just getting choked up about it.
Well, this is my time to choke up, and then you'll probably have yours later.
Nah.
No, he did everything from Winnie the Pooh to Darkwing Duck to just about a lot of characters that not many people realize as part of their childhood. So
yeah, he's a voice actor.
Yeah.
So he's done a lot of voices over the years. He's actually done Pooh and Tigger for a very long time.
That's right. And he's had a ton of roles aside from just those ones. Like, he's had roles in some other Disney films, as well as Aladdin. He's had a role in Shrek. He had a role in some Family Guy episodes, oddly enough. His filmography is pretty vast. So, and starting from way back into the early 70s as part of that, it's pretty incredible to see somebody still working in the business for that amount of time and doing
stuff.
Well,
how incredible is it? I mean, I remember Winnie the Pooh and these characters from when I was a little boy. Like, I was a kid, and now going to the theater as a mid-30s adult, like, the voice is the same. In watching the trailers for this movie, I was mind-boggled just how quick... You know how they say, like, in real life, when you're not viewing through a screen or whatever, in real life, smell is such a, like, strong activator of memory. Like,
yeah.
If you smell something that reminds you of childhood, like, there's a whole rush of emotions and memories and nostalgia and whatever that comes with certain scents and fragrances. Well, in many ways, like, hearing this guy do Winnie the Pooh in the trailer when it first debuted a few months ago, I was totally taken back to my childhood, because it's the same. Like, it's the voice of Winnie the Pooh. I don't know what they're going to do when he's not available anymore, because nobody can ever do Winnie the Pooh that way.
Yeesh. And that's a scary thing to even think about. Like, as we're getting older, I know this whole movie is steeped in nostalgia and kind of... It kind of caters to, as much as there was children there, it caters to that older demographic.
100%.
This is a movie where people who grew up, much like Chad, myself, Spencer apparently didn't watch Winnie the Pooh when he was growing up. He watched the nightly news.
Wow.
No, I did watch Winnie the Pooh. I remember it was the New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Gotta get up, gotta get going. No, you don't. No, that's the opening theme.
Yeah,
okay.
That was the theme song, right?
That's
yeah.
not the theme song I'm familiar with.
Well, whatever bootleg Winnie the Pooh you saw growing up,
I see the bootleg version.
But this completely caters to that demographic, the people who grew up watching the cartoons, seeing the movies as a young child, even the books. There's plenty of books that, you know, emulate the mini adventures of Winnie the Pooh and his friends.
Well, it started as a book, you know, decades before it was ever a cartoon.
Yeah.
You know, movie and eventual cartoon series and all that. It was children's books.
Yeah. So we got a chance to check out the film, and the film debuts tomorrow for those of you listening. So on Friday it debuts. Spencer's looking at me weird.
I'm lost in the week. I don't know when this is.
It's okay, Spence. We'll direct you to the door. So we're kind of going to jump into this, because the unique thing about this is that, like Chad was mentioning, Chad actually has a real special place for this particular franchise intellectual property. I don't know what you would consider Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, it's totally. I mean, well, yeah, I mean the Disney-fied version of Pooh, I guess you could say, which
yeah.
is all I've ever known. I never read the kids' books, you know, before mm-hmm. watching the cartoons as a youngster, but yeah, I mean, we started very young in my household. We saw all the original movies. I don't know about some of the newer ones. I probably have not seen most of the newer ones, but all the old ones that I would consider the classics, I've seen all of those numerous times.
So a little bit of information. Jim Cummings has played Winnie the Pooh and Tigger in Disney features since 1988 and 1989. Full-time actually since 1999, respectively. This movie will be released 41 years after the 1977 mini-adventures of Winnie the Pooh, 21 years after Pooh's Grand Adventure, The Search for Christopher Robin in 97, 18 years after the Tigger movie in 2000, 15 years after Piglet's Big Movie in 2003, 13 years after Pooh's Heffalump movie, and 7 years after Winnie the Pooh in 2011. So, needless to say, there's a lot of Winnie the Pooh out there. There's a lot of Pooh out there, Spencer. You catching my drift? There's a lot of poo.
I'm just not.
You smelling what I'm throwing down?
Nope.
You catching that?
Nah. I don't play with poo like that.
There it was.
So before we jump in to the poo, there's a little bit of extra, like a little bit of nostalgia that works within this film in terms of our histories, but I don't think anybody here has as much of a history or a connection to these particular characters as you do, Chad. And I wondered if you could kind of touch a little bit on where that comes from. Like, where did you start being,
where did I first encounter Winnie the Pooh?
Where did you first encounter
Christopher
Pooh?
Robin and all of his stuffed animal friends? I was very young. My grandparents' house, actually, my cousins and I would watch it a lot with grandma and my aunt. My aunt, who loves Eeyore, still to this day, she identifies with Eeyore quite a lot. So I'm excited for her to see this movie because Eeyore actually has several standout moments.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy when you've got so many fun, colorful characters. It's easy for some of them to get overlooked. And Eeyore is definitely one of the standouts in this particular story, which is nice. So is Winnie the Pooh, which has Winnie the Pooh and Tigger have always been my two favorites of the whole bunch. But
both of the ones that are voiced by Jim Cummings.
Yeah, oh, okay. It's so good. Like the older that I've gotten, and the more that I've known to pay attention to the craft of voice acting, which a lot of people probably just assume, like, oh yeah, you just go in and you do a voice, but the way that he does the cadences and the nonverbal stuff and just everything with these two characters in particular, even among really well-established, totally competent voice acting professionals, I think this still stands out as some of the most distinctive vocal work, you know, to do behind the microphone, you know, in a sound studio somewhere where, you know, you might have heard these characters for years and you don't know what Jim Cummings looks like.
True.
Because he's never been on screen, but you know the voices really well. And I mean, just all the subtlety and texture that he works into Pooh and Tigger and always has. It's really enjoyable and delightful for me. But anyway, grew up watching the movies, singing along with the songs. We watched them numerous times per season. Like, it wasn't just like once a year we watched, you know, the mini adventures of Winnie the Pooh or any of the rest of them. We watched them many, 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 many times, and there's just so much to love within them, so many little moments that it always brings a smile to my face. So seeing now in this film, you've got everything translated into live action, where everything before has been cartoons, as far as my interaction has gone with the franchise.
Yeah.
Now you've got everything in live action with human actors and CGI stuffed animals that have that more authentic, textured quality of, you know, like ratty old toys that have been, you know, put by the wayside and maybe forgotten about, and they got dirty over the years and nobody ever bothered to clean them up and, you know, whatever. But man, the voices themselves, you don't notice. Like, there's the life and the personality of the characters still comes across very, very strongly, in my opinion, in this movie. So the fact that it's not a cartoon this time around really wasn't as distracting as I thought it would be.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the things that, like, just a quick side note, that was one of the things that kind of threw me for a concern in terms of this particular film, seeing as they were going to translate what had been consistently an animated feature since the beginning to live action. And that kind of worried me because we've seen what has happened with certain properties that were animated films or animated, you know, properties, and then get the transition to, you know, live action, and they kind of make them a little bit more real, and that realism just really messes the entire purpose of the film. It just throws everybody for a loop. So needless to say, there hasn't been a great track record with adding realism into the animated world.
I agree. I think sometimes what filmmakers assume audiences always want is to get something that's grittier.
Yeah.
And, you know, just more rough and almost dismal at times. And it's important to not overlook, with any franchise, what is it that makes it so powerful, so popular, so well appreciated for so long? In this case, it's the heart. So yeah, you can't, as long as, I mean, obviously they do, they've grown Christopher Robin up as a character. He's a father and a husband and a hard worker. He, in this rendition of the story, he fought in World War II.
You know, let's talk about that for a second. Because I did not come into this movie expecting a slight World War II montage, which was just kind of crazy. Like that's just kind of one of the weird things about placing it in the real world, is that it's in the real world and things happen here that normally don't in Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, I mean, unbeknownst to you, like, Christopher Robin could have lost his leg in the war, and he could have been, you know, having a peg leg and would have played a great pirate with Winnie the Pooh and his friends.
Okay, I mean, the pirate part, that's actually a real, like, that's just too weird, like, to have, like, Christopher Robin in a war.
So that part was a little too real for you, is what I'm hearing.
Yes, it was odd. Why was he in a war? He belongs in the Hundred Acre Wood.
Well, since Spence spoke up, Spence, why don't you let us know, or let the listeners know, where does your expertise lie when it comes to Winnie the Pooh?
I wouldn't say expertise. It was more of like my sister was watching it and I was there.
Ah.
So, you know, just like learning through osmosis. So
a third party observer is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. And then, you know, it became one of those.
No wonder you didn't recognize the theme song, because you probably weren't even there when it started. You're just like, oh, okay, I'll go watch my sister. Okay, I'll go watch her. And then you just walk into the room after it's already started. Poser.
You don't. You call me a Winnie the Pooh poser?
Winnie the Pooh poser. You a poo poser? Spencer the Pooh poser.
So, yes, I'm familiar with, like, the 90s cartoons and then some of the older work. And then that weird thing I just remembered existed. There was, like, a puppet or thing or something odd that was mildly, like, live action. It wasn't quite animation. And I need to look this up.
Yeah, you need to look this up because I have no idea what you're talking about. But
now, going back to some of the, like, nostalgia, some things that come in very early, mm-hmm, in this film are things like turning the pages of the book and the artwork in the book comes to life. In this case, it comes to life like in photographic realism, and then back and forth. It tells quite a bit of the beginning when you're kind of orienting. You get a little bit of Christopher Robin as a boy with, you know, Pooh and all the friends in the Hundred Acre Wood, and then you get some of the sequences of how he grew up the way he grew up, and what he went through, including World War II. And all of that is done with that same, like, turning the pages of the book and moving from chapter to chapter, which is something that the cartoons did all the time.
Yeah.
And you'd often have, you know, like, the characters, the cartoon characters would jump from one page to another.
Yeah.
Like, they actually,
that's part of, like, their journey.
They jumped the gap from one page to the other. This one doesn't quite go that far. But I did like the nod to that aesthetic choice that they've been making for decades, you know, with the cartoons.
I thought it was a great touch. So real quick before I jump into that, just in terms of my area of expertise, or even just my understanding of the property. So I'm like Chad, cartoon wise, or even watching it frequently, the majority of what I knew was from The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. And my brother was a fan of the actual film, the original film. So we had a VHS copy of that. And so that would get thrown on at least 3-4 times a day. And so I began watching it and enjoying it after some time. And it was one of those movies that was always a mainstay in our house. If it wasn't that, it was some Newsboys concert on VHS as well that would get stuck in the VCR. But either way, so my brother would constantly ask my parents to rent the latest Winnie the Pooh film, which until once he got old enough, with that stopped in a hot minute. But I do have some memory of a lot of what had happened in the original cartoon and the series. So, but in terms of like what the film's nostalgic factor for me overall falls in, I think a lot of it has to do with the voice of Jim Cummings. Going back to that, in terms of hitting that that nostalgic button, if you will, that Chad mentioned about smell, hearing his voice, and I guess this is just piggybacking on what you were saying, hearing his voice, because of the fact that he was such a huge voice actor during the early 90s when cartoons were great, you know, when they actually made sense and they actually weren't about, you know, weird gumballs or people being ridiculous or...
Yeah, I can't watch cartoons nowadays.
I have no idea.
Make any sense to me.
I have no... Most of the cartoons nowadays seem like they're made for older people.
Oh, they are.
And even the innocent ones, like, there's a ton of these new cartoons, like Steven Universe. Mm. Steven Universe is a newer cartoon that is completely for the older demographic because of some of the little beats that it hits. But it kind of touches, like, it bright colors and certain characters kids can relate to, but, like, the situations that happen and the content that happens throughout the entire series, there's a lot of stuff that's, like, really meant for older folks. And now, like, back then, it was simple. I mean, you had Ren and you had Stimpy. You had Doug and his drawings and Patty Mayonnaise.
Okay.
You had...
I feel like maybe because we were kids watching this, like, I bet if you rewatched some of them, you'd find a little bit more than you realize.
I still watch them. They're on Hulu. By the way, this episode is not sponsored by Hulu, but if you guys want to sponsor us, Hulu, we'll take it.
Also, that 80s Pooh show was called Welcome to Pooh Corner.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
You can keep that creeper whatever video you just showed me on your phone.
So bad.
I am good. But go ahead and jump and run into the film because we want to kind of get started talking on this. The film, so obviously, some of the expectations for what was going to happen in this film, honestly, in my mind, the biggest expectation was to see them do the characters right. Mm-hmm. Like, that was my only expectation. I'm not a perfectionist. I haven't seen all God knows how many films of the Winnie the Pooh franchise. But I know that there was a heart to the original cartoon. There was a heart to the original film. And that was what needed to be honored. That's what was needed to be respected. And I think that's where this film needed to touch on and reconnect with. Like I said, I haven't seen anything since 1994 or whatever in terms of the cartoons and whatnot, but I know the heart of what the film and the original cartoon was about. And I would say, like, this film needed to reconnect with that. If it was going to hit that nostalgia factor, if it was going to do the whole, like, reach for the older demographic, people who grew up with this, it had to go and start there first. In my mind. What about you, Chad?
I will skip over the expectation part because I was really excited for this movie. I didn't know that it was being made because, I mean, there's been a lot of press on things like Dumbo, the live-action Dumbo that's going to come out next year. Mary Poppins with, you know, Emily Blunt and Lin-Manuel Miranda. There have been some other live-action adaptations that have already happened. Obviously, Beauty and the Beast was a big deal.
Yeah.
Last year or whenever it came out. This one kind of, I don't know if I just don't, I mean, I'm not a huge Disney follower as an adult, obviously, like many, many, many people in our generation. You know, I grew up watching Disney films, cartoon films. Every summer they had another one, summer or fall. And, you know, but I haven't really followed them as an adult. I don't have kids of my own yet to be all, you know, tied into the Disney machine aside from the Marvel Cinematic Universe and Star Wars, which didn't start out as Disney properties, but they are now.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, I just wasn't connected enough to even know that this movie was happening until I think it was during the Super Bowl or right after the Super Bowl was the first teaser for this movie. And I remember sitting, staring at the screen, completely dumbfounded because you have, in that first teaser, you had Ewan McGregor on a park bench saying, oh, what to do, what to do, what to do. And then you have the voice of Winnie the Pooh, what to do indeed. I still remember thinking, like, my entire brain stopped, like a train slamming on the brakes stopped. And I was like, that was Winnie the Pooh. Like, that was that was legitimately the voice of Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Like, reaching back from childhood into the present with a live action performer. And I'm like, wait a minute, when did they make this movie? And so I've been excited for a while. For many, many months, I've been excited because I'm like, wait, I didn't even know this was happening. And now here it is. So I think that for me, if I were to succinctly summarize what I would expect in this film, I think that I really wanted it to be more almost a product of its time when it was at least originally as a cartoon, not maybe as a book series, but when it was originally created as a series of cartoon movies. I wanted it to feel like that rather than this whole, like, everybody today has short attention spans. Let's speed things up and move things along and make it all choppy. And I think that's a lot of what cartoons in general these days do. They're bright colors, they're noisy, they're loud, they're random, and they don't often have a point.
Yeah.
They're moving too fast to have a point. And they're just desperate to keep your attention with funny sight gags and jokes. And I think what's always been true of this particular franchise is the heart, is the deeper meaning underneath it, that as long as you've got enough, like, you know, Tigger with his hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo thing that he's doing, or Winnie the Pooh with his very unique way of thinking and processing life, and, like, philosophizing, as long as you've got enough of those touch points, or Piglet with his scarediness, or, you know, Eeyore with his doomsday, kind of like, oh, woe is me, you know, whatever he does all the time. I mean, as long as you've got those character beats in there, you can actually take the time to sit in an insightful moment, an emotional moment, a moment where you know, if you're a child, maybe you're processing uncertainty in a way that you've never done before. And I was really hoping, because there is a lot of richness and depth to the cartoons that I remember. There's also a lot of whimsy and wonder, and I like that too. I was hoping that this movie would have that blend without trying to tell the story too fast. That's what I wanted.
What about you, Spence?
So yeah, I didn't want to see this movie because, like,
man,
what? I don't know. There's just something about it that was like,
you weren't interested in seeing this movie at all.
No.
What were your reasons for not wanting to see it?
I don't know. I always had problems with Winnie the Pooh's logic on things, or the lack of it as a child.
This coming from the man who finds enjoyment in B movies.
No, no, no. We're talking about, like,
we literally just finished. We finished just rewatching Sharknado 5, and you looked at me dumbfounded as to why I was struggling to focus on the film.
Yeah. No, just as a
tomato,
kid.
Tomato, tomato.
I had a hard time with, like, you know, some of the logic stuff, and, like, it bothered me back then. So then, like, I was like, I don't want to go back to where, like,
I don't want to go back. You can't make me. I don't want it.
Oh, but we can.
Yeah, but, like, it wasn't quite like I remember it. It was actually a lot better than that.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad. So jumping in, like Chad had mentioned earlier, obviously, you're introduced to Christopher Robin as this montage of him growing up, saying goodbye to his friends, and growing up in a boarding school, getting older, getting married, going to war, having a child. It's a quick montage.
They don't waste time with
it. It clearly is meant to establish that Christopher Robin has grown up, plain and simple. And he is lead of this team, this efficiency team at this company, and he's got to make the hard decisions, and he ends up having to make a whole weekend that was supposed to be meant for his family out at the cottage. He ends up having to work the whole weekend, and so it just so happens that Winnie the Pooh finds him and engages him in a search for the rest of Winnie the Pooh's friends because they seem to have been lost. And so that's essentially the story within the first 25, 30 minutes of the film. That kind of jump starts the film into the mm-hmm. whole grand scheme of it. But like we were saying earlier, Ewan McGregor is one of those particular actors that I just really enjoy. It's either as Obi-Wan Kenobi or as the individual from Trainspotting, or he's doing something. He always seems to be doing something unique and fun, and he actually even had a role, believe it or not, he had a role in an episode of Tales from the Crypt, which was really cool, and he plays a zombie. So it's great. It's wonderful.
Is it a Winnie the Pooh themed episode?
Oh, no.
Gosh, and I don't want to talk about it.
Winnie the Pooh is a zombie, though? I mean,
I'm sorry. No. Winnie the Pooh themed Tales of the Crypt episode is something that would be just bizarre.
Hey, Jim Cummings did the entire opening monologue for Darth Vader in the Winnie the Pooh voice, and it was miraculous.
That's true. You can find it online.
That was so great. But so Ewan McGregor is never an issue whenever I see him in a film. I know he's going to do a great job. I know he always puts like his best foot forward, which is why like characters like Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, you have no problem trusting him to take on that kind of role because he does well.
I agree. I think that even movies that I know people who've had issue with some movies that he's been in, including the Star Wars prequels, by the way, which were garbage, but he was good.
He was great.
Mm-hmm. He was totally watchable. A lot of people feel that way very similarly about The Island, which is one of Michael Bay's pre-Transformers movies. Oh, yeah. I love that movie, and he's a big part of the reason why I love it, because he is so enjoyable to watch. Mm-hmm. He plays two different roles in that movie.
Yeah.
Eventually. Not at first. But
if you haven't seen it.
You know, but there's something about the... I think it, at least what struck me in Christopher Robin, the movie that we're reviewing here,
mm-hmm.
what struck me was how expressive he is with his face.
Yeah.
There's like a light in his eyes. There's a twinkle there. There's like little winks and nods and like half smiles and things that he does that completely complement the idea of a set of talking stuffed animals on screen with him. I mean, like they're just these whimsical little touches. It's not like, you know, it's not gravitas of a great dramatic actor. Not that he can't do that. I'm sure that he can and has before. But he knows kind of when to ham it up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like to be a little bit cartoonish, dare we say. Not in like a Jim Carrey kind of way.
Yeah.
But, you know, to really kind of have that more plastic exterior that can, in a way, match some of these cartoon characters in terms of expressiveness and subtext. A lot of what you talk about when you're talking with performers and telling them, like instructing them how to hone their craft, or you're analyzing a great performer, what you are looking for is not just can they memorize a line or two and say them correctly, or can they cry on cue or whatever.
Yeah,
you're looking for them to manifest the inner life of the character, to have what's called subtext in every moment that they're on screen or on stage or, you know, what have you. And, you know, really great performers can do that in a way that appears effortless. I think that Ewan McGregor often has been one of those types of performers, and I think he is here too, because you do get the pathos of, you know, I don't want to be working instead of with my family, but my family won't have the lifestyle that we've become used to and we want if I don't work.
Yeah.
So I have to live with being less than the father I want to be, or less than the husband I want to be, in order to be the husband and father that I want to be. Like, you get a lot of that tension
yeah.
in the way that he delivers his lines looks at the other performers, etc., and it comes through obviously with the CGI characters as well.
True, and you're taking some, but you're taking a character that, mind you, has been seen for the most part in two dimensions. It's been an animated character you have, and it's always been a child. So you're looking at somebody who has to take what has been created as a child, what has been emulated from a childlike perspective, and create a third dimension to it, give it life, and allow it to grow up, and allow that to manifest in a particular actor so that they can convey everything that has already been conveyed in the last 40 years, but in a grown-up mentality now. And that's something that somebody like Ewan McGregor is completely capable of doing and does really well. Mm-hmm. Because there are scenes, kind of like what Chad was saying, there are scenes where you see the progression, you see it visibly on Ewan McGregor's face as he is contemplating the decisions he's making, and it's breaking down the certain structures that he's built within his mindset of being an adult, taking care of his family the only way he knows how, being the man of the house, and then realizing what he had forgotten. And there's a great progression visibly in terms of how he comes to that mindset. And Ewan McGregor is one of those individuals that you just totally just gush about.
I agree. And I think, too, a lot of what appeals to me as an adult about, you know, this franchise now hopefully having a bit of a renaissance. I mean, I'd love to see more of these films.
Mm.
I think the character designs of the plush, non, you know, two-dimensional cartoon versions of these characters, I want to collect them. I want them all. Like, the inner child inside me is like, man, I wish I had kids so I could use them as the excuse for buying all of these nice plush toys, because they're really darn cute.
Oh yeah.
And the visual effects for them is phenomenal. I mean, in terms of like when they're wet versus dry and they're dirty versus clean, and when you get up close to them, not only do they have the kind of fur and fuzz, but they have the cottony cloth base that all of that kind of grows off of. Like, they're not animals, they are stuffed animals. And when you get up close to them, you can see that level of very intricate detail. And I love the delicacy with which they were fashioned.
Oh yeah.
You know, for this film. One of the other things that struck me in terms of Christopher Robin's journey, because it's called Christopher Robin. It's not called Winnie the Pooh. It's not called Hundred Acre Wood. It's called Christopher Robin for a reason. And I think that harkens back to a lot of what you were mentioning earlier with you're sitting in the theater, and we had a bunch of kids in the theater in the press screening with us. There were a lot of children in the audience, and I think they were engaged, but I do think it's one of those films that you get a lot more out of it as an adult, whether you saw the originals or not, because yeah, a lot of the storyline progression of, you know, Christopher Robin as the title character is, you know, what does it feel like to grow up and become a part of the adult world? But then do you ever get those sort of gut check moments where you reflect back on things that you knew as a child, maybe that backwards logic of a stuffed teddy bear, you know, like you were talking about, Spencer.
Mm-hmm. It's Spencer hated.
It's not logic. Mm-mm. It's wonder. It's almost like the opposite of logic. But it doesn't make it not true. It's just a very interesting
perspective,
way of looking at the world. And the more time that the character of Christopher Robin spends around Winnie the Pooh, and some of the others, obviously, but mm-hmm, I mean, Winnie the Pooh is the big draw there.
Of course.
You know, the more time he spends around them, the more it influences how he processes where he is at in his life right now. With the responsibilities, with the family to provide for, with the big expectations at his job, and all of that. But you know, that childhood anti-logic that still somehow paradoxically makes sense,
mm-hmm,
definitely influences how he makes choices moving forward. And I think as an adult sitting in the theater, I was sitting there kind of very self-reflective at some of the moments in this movie, like, wait a minute, I've been so caught up in the way that the adult world, quote unquote, works, mm-hmm. and the way that, you know, the machine kind of runs, that I've lost touch a little bit with the part that kind of just has more of that intuitive anti-logic thing that's still not wrong. It's just different.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like I had moments a few times while watching the movie. I was like, man, I'd like to get some of that back.
Yeah, no joke.
And the stuffed teddy bear makes it sound like it's not too far out of grasp.
That's very true. What about you, Spence? Did you catch any of that? Any of those feelings, those emotions, that level of nostalgia while you were watching this film? Mr. Magical?
No, I was just thinking about that one part in the classic series where Pooh's just walking around a tree and Christopher Robin walks up and he's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm following someone. But he's following himself.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
so good. Spencer, he's not so hurting good. Anybody.
He's not, but he's wrong. He's not following anyone. He's following himself. What is he doing in the forest?
Let alone Tigger, whenever he sees his own reflection and he thinks that it's another Tigger, but he's the only one. So, which is super consistent. He's always that way. He always has been that way. But
yeah. And I think that's one of the things about these characters. I think for a lot of us who grew up with these particular characters, one of the biggest draws is that level of whimsy and innocence that these characters emulate. Like Winnie the Pooh is the biggest dunce you could probably list in all of animation, but it's not because he just wants to be, it's because just the way he is, and it's never in a way that it's hurtful towards anybody or right. it's to cause harm or he's being this way because there's a nefarious, you know, underplot that's gonna come to light at the end of the series. No, it's just him processing the world around him through the eyes of a child who then kind of allows this imagination to take life with Christopher Robin, obviously, when they're younger. And it's really great to have the opportunity to go to a place where you can see that and be like, yeah, that's I can see that mindset. Like simply when he's talking about, he's like these, there's a scene in the trailer and it's also in the film where Christopher Robin comes downstairs because he hears a crash in the kitchen and he looks at Pooh and these shelves are falling onto the floor and Pooh tells him this ladder isn't very good. And Christopher Robin says, well, that's because they're shelves. He's like, no wonder they didn't make a good ladder. That's simple logic and it's innocent. And it's like there's a level of just innocence that you just can't blame. You can't get upset with because of the fact that it's like he's not wrong.
No,
Spencer,
you can get
he's
upset
not wrong.
That. You know how many shells he has to put back up?
And it's a learning opportunity.
At the same time, that kind of simple approach, I mean, I think that, you know, we live in a very complex society. We have a lot of choices with, you know, regard to how we spend our time. And I think sometimes you get those beautiful moments, like one moment about midway through the film, the tables kind of turn. So at first, when Winnie the Pooh comes into the modern world, modern as in like the late 40s, early 50s, he comes into the modern world because he doesn't know where his friends are. They've all disappeared, and he ends up in the real world with the grown-up Christopher Robin, and he wants Christopher to come back to the Hundred Acre Wood and help him find Piglet, Tigger, Eeyore, Rabbit, Roo, Kanga, and Owl,
mm-hmm.
right? And because he doesn't know where any of them are. And Christopher Robin goes through the tree and goes into, you know, the imagination land, the Hundred Acre Wood. But then about midway through the film, there's a twist. Not like a twisty twist, but just the tables have turned. And some of the stuffed animals decide we need to go back into the real world and we need to help him. He always comes and helps us. We need to go help him. And Piglet, who is always the shy, scared one with a big heart and who usually has moments where he'll stand up and do something really brave out of nowhere, he's too scared to go through the pathway, the portal into the real world. And you have a simple-minded character like Pooh who simply holds out his little paw and basically says, hold my hand, and then tells Piglet, we need you. Like, you can overcomplicate things all you want. You can be the kind of person who wants to help somebody who's struggling with self-esteem or confidence, mm-hmm. whatever, and try to, like, fix the situation or adjust their mentality of, like, well, maybe if you thought about it like this, or imagine everybody in the room is naked and then you'll be fine on stage, whatever it may be. You can come up with these very complex attempts at a solution versus somebody who's simple-minded like Pooh just saying, we need you. Like, yeah. you matter. And just saying it very simply, very straightforward. Who wouldn't want to hear that?
Yeah.
When they're feeling very weak and not worth it, like not able to contribute, and then somebody like Pooh turns and says, not only are you able, but we need you to come with us. Yeah. Like, that's really, really cool. And only a character like Pooh can really pull that off that bluntly and innocently, like you were mentioning.
Well, and one of the things about the characters, especially Winnie the Pooh, one of the things about him is that there's no subtext to what he's saying. When he says it, it's literally front of mind, front of heart. So when he says, you know, you are this, it's what he feels and it's what he's thinking and it's what he feels. And so telling something like that to Piglet, there's a lot more meaning to it because it removes any necessity of, like Chad was saying, having to overcomplicate. You know, Pooh gets on this soapbox and, like, we need to go and, you know, we will not go quietly into right. the night. And
I knew you were going to reference that bull Phil Pullman's face.
There was no need for that because of the fact
that... Well, there's no ulterior motive.
Exactly.
With Pooh.
Exactly.
It just is what it is.
And that kind of goes towards the structure of how this particular film was done. And oddly enough, the director of this film isn't really known for his... As of recent, he's not really known for doing films like this. He's Mark Forster is the director. He's the one who directed, I don't know if you guys remember, 2001's Monsters Ball, which was that film with Billy Bob Thornton, Halle Berry.
She got an Oscar for it.
She did. Mm. But he did do other unique films like, I don't know if you guys ever saw 2004's Finding Neverland.
Yeah.
The movie about
also
Jay and Barry.
Extremely good and, like, you know, all the feels mm-hmm. from childhood.
All the feels. As well as things like The Kite Runner. He actually did Quantum Solace as well. So the man has a very unique range, but I think one of the things that's very consistent about his films is there is a level of heart and transparency that he puts in every single one of his movies that allows his characters to really connect with minimal effort to the audience. Mm-hmm. And when you use a property such as Winnie the Pooh was already like, it's already there with most people. It hits that level of connectivity with some older folks as well as the newer ones. And you add that layer of great storytelling by somebody like Mark Forster and incorporating that unique transparency that only a great director can. This film is really going to move a lot of people when they go and see it. And I'm just going to kind of put it out there. I happened to turn over and look at Chad during the course of the film, and I know there was a few times, and I was sniffling too, but there were a few times where you were pretty choked up during the film. I mean, it really moved you.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's similar to the whole, like, the olfactory sense of smell. Like, mm-hmm. sometimes certain smells will really take you back. I mean, there are definitely not only the voices, but the actual, like, character beats of maybe, like, three or four times.
Mm.
And I would say for me, primarily in the first half of the film, when Christopher is way out of touch with how he used to be as a kid, he's turned into the Heffalump, essentially. Yeah. He is the happiness thief. And he has to confront that about himself. Because, you know, the working world, the modern adult world has shaped him. And he's now back in this fantastical land with the nonsensical Pooh and and some others, and he has to reconnect. And there are just a few moments that some of them were really great to me because they were direct homages to moments in the cartoons from before, like specific lines of dialogue or the way that the scene was filmed, like the mise-en-scene, the way that the shot composition worked, really like, oh, wow, that is actually very close. I mean, one of them was, I didn't tear up for it, but when Pooh wakes up at one point and does his little calisthenics workout to get ready to eat breakfast in his little nightcap and his nightgown and whatever, like that is totally pulled right from the movie. You've got like Tigger does his song at one point.
Which apparently Spencer just realized that he's spelling his name like a few seconds ago. He didn't really. That was really interesting to hear that. We were doing our notes and Spencer's like, oh, he's spelling his name like that. And we're like, wait, what?
Yeah, T-I-double-G-er.
It's okay, Spence.
And so there are some moments like that that are definitely like just like, you know, heartwarming. Like, oh, wow, that's really cool that they put that in there because they're some of the most distinctive moments of the earlier installments of the franchise, the cartoon. Yeah. What one might call the source material, even though there's even earlier source material in the books. But then there are definitely some very, not like overly saccharine emotional, but like there are some strings in the soundtrack and it's just a very meaningful, poignant moment every now and again. And I totally got choked up because I was like, that's such a Winnie the Pooh thing to do or like whatever. Obviously, it also, you know, like, nostalgically took me back to childhood memories and, you know, days gone by. And there's a lot of, because the story isn't overcomplicated, it's not overly noisy or ridiculously like, oh, everybody here has a short attention span, so let's keep them interested. It does take the time to move you from one emotional beat to another emotional beat and work you through that groove.
Yeah.
Start to finish. And that lets you then rest in some of them in the midst of it. Like, there's a beautiful moment after, spoiler alert, Christopher Robin finds the other stuffed animals and, you know, rescues them or whatever. Like, they're not lost like Pooh thinks they are. But by that point, then Christopher and Pooh have been separated. And when they then find Pooh later, he's sitting in a very iconic spot that, you know, if you're at all familiar with the earlier stories, you'll be like, oh, right, okay, I remember something like that. It looks like a space that I kind of remember from when I was a kid. And I remember it was just like, it was such a Winnie the Pooh moment. Like, all the other characters basically tell Christopher, well, of course he's here. He's here waiting for you. And then Winnie the Pooh, being a very straightforward, uncomplicated little teddy bear, when Christopher sits down beside him, he says, in a very non-judgmental, non-manipulative way, very matter-of-factly, he says, yeah, I was here waiting for you. Like, that's what makes Winnie the Pooh so good, without having to be so complex and nuanced and jaded and shaded and whatever and all. I mean, even somebody like Eeyore, right? Yeah. The ho-hum, like, oh, this guy is always falling. Like, Eeyore doesn't need a lot of subtext and nuance. He always is pessimistic in the way that he interprets things, but then they find a way to do it that doesn't deprive the audience or even him as a character of all moments of joy and celebration. So you don't have to be overly complicated with any of these characters.
Yeah.
Because really, the complexity of, let's call it, the human experience, the way that shines through is when you put all of it together. It is the Eeyore playing off of Tigger and Pooh pointing things out to Piglet and Christopher Robin coming to the rescue or needing them to point things out to them, or Rabbit being curmudgeonly and Owl trying to be overly wise when he's really not as smart as everybody thinks he is.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's the sum of its parts. It's not in the individual component. And that's where you get that complexity and that richness of the story is all those things working together. When it's done well, you feel very satisfied by the end of either the cartoon movies or, in this case, you know, maybe, hopefully, perhaps the live-action one.
Speaking of curmudgeon-y, Spencer, were there any...
Wow.
I don't even know why.
That was just a rough transition.
Was there anything about this film that actually stood out to you? Any highlights? Because I know you were saying you weren't looking forward to seeing it. You didn't even really want to see it. Yet you saw it. Was there anything that stood out in this film without giving away any spoilers? Was there anything that stood out in terms of characters, scenes, anything that you really enjoyed from this film?
Okay, probably Eeyore, because normally, like...
Because you relate the most?
No.
Okay.
It's because I remember just Eeyore being so sad, like, as a kid. I was like, ugh, Eeyore's in this episode. I can't handle this.
Wow. Because,
like, he's always just no love to Eeyore. Downer, and it's depressing.
But he's like, a donkey, okay? The man doesn't have a tail because it's pinned on his backside, and he lives in a teepee made of sticks.
Which didn't fall down, I don't think.
It's fallen down so actually, many times.
I mean, in a way, he has like a modified, not even a teepee, but yeah. He has a modified, that shape does make an appearance mm-hmm. in a completely different format.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed how they used Eeyore in this movie because, like, there's, like, something, even though he's being depressing, something still
even
joyful
though he's being depressing
about it. So I really enjoyed him.
Well,
and appreciated that.
There's totally... This movie does one of the best things that you've ever seen any of the stories do with Eeyore.
Yeah.
Because Eeyore becomes a very integral part of, in a way, reintegrating Christopher into the environment of the Hundred Acre Woods. He and Christopher have this really beautiful sequence. I mean, fun, beautiful, not like artistically beautiful, but like emotionally beautiful, meaningful, good, like light bulb moment that they kind of end up cooperating on at one point. That I've never seen them do quite that good of a job with Eeyore as a character. I think it's one of the absolute best character moments you've ever seen from that woe is me little donkey.
Mm-hmm. It's true, they really gave him a lot of room to shine in this particular project, so I think that was also another one of the highlights for me. Another highlight was obviously getting a chance to see Tigger. Is still he was voiced again by Jim Cummings, so that was a plus. And then all the beats that he normally hits, all the pride and ego of, you know, well, lucky I'm not out there or else I'd be bouncing all over those heffalumps and blah blah blah, in getting upset at, you know, seeing reflections of himself, it hits a lot of those familiar beats that you just really get mm-hmm. excited about and you watch and the reason why you fell in love with them in the first place. What about you, Chad? Anything that really stood out before we get to our final thoughts?
There were a lot of standout moments. I think one of the things that surprised me, I'll say, is very similarly to one of the cartoons,
mm-hmm.
the climax of this story is very simple. It's not overly dastardly or like it's just there are adult characters who react in ways that you would not expect if you were going for that gritty hyper-realism of like this is how people in the real world would deal with this situation. It doesn't do that. It really leans into the main message and the heart behind everything. And usually that would frustrate me because there's a lack of reality to it. And I think that there is a lack of reality to it. I think that it's a very quick and simple resolution that happens in the film. However, yeah. I really loved that they did that because it kind of does. It is a live action film with the heart of a cartoon, of a meaningful cartoon, mm-hmm. like yeah. cartoons used to be done. And very few of them are anymore done this way with this amount of depth and sort of long-term meaning. And so I love that it's a live action film with the heart of a really well done cartoon, because it's kind of the best of both worlds in that regard.
Yeah.
It's a very nice blend of what we might consider two different styles of filmmaking.
True. Well, wrapping this up real quick before we give our thoughts, our final thoughts and review, and our scoring, Spencer, was there any issues you had? I know I enjoyed the film quite a bit, and I'm sure Chad did as well. But seeing as you're the only heffalump in the room, I wanted
to... I don't think you're a heffalump, Spencer.
Hey, thanks, Chad.
You're a woozle.
I don't think you're a woozle either.
You're a heffalump. did you have any issues with the film? Anything that really kind of rubbed you the wrong way or even just didn't appease you? Or entertain
you. I need
you.
To be appeased?
You are the critic. This is your job now, man. Your job is to critique these things.
No, because...
You actually enjoyed it.
Yeah, I actually did enjoy this movie. I thought it was really well done. Like, all the minor problems I like normally have with Winnie the Pooh were just kind of absent or reworked in ways that were actually really fun. So I actually really enjoyed it.
That's good to hear. So anybody who may have be who may be having second thoughts because of the cartoon or any previous iteration, you can honestly say that those issues that you had were wiped away and you actually enjoyed the film.
Yeah, I'm actually really glad I went.
Cool. That's good to hear. Well, let's go ahead and go around the table and see if the film...
We're just stopping with me and my issues and no one else had any potential issues?
I didn't have any issues. Did you have any issues?
Let's see. Did I have any issues? Nothing that stands out as major. I mean, again, if I was in a different mood, I might critique the climax of the film for being overly simplified. But the way that I feel at the moment that we're reviewing it now, I really thought it was nice.
Spencer the Heffalump.
To keep it simple.
So with that, we're going to go around the table and see if the film passes or fails and how many monocles it gets. And we will start with Spencer.
Yeah, I'll pass this movie. It was pretty well done. Mm-hmm. Like, CGI work was actually really good. I wonder what it was like for Ewan McGregor to like be talking to almost nothing constantly. That's like whenever he's in the 108.
Maybe he had Peter Dinklage in his arms. You don't know.
Oh my gosh, you did not. Oh, we're going to be fired.
Oh, poor
Can you imagine
Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage doing all of Winnie the Pooh's lines?
Oh, no.
Okay. Christopher Robin, your ladder doesn't work.
Oh, my gosh, no.
All right, so anyway, the score for the movie, I'm going to give it a 3.5.
I'll go next. The film passes for me.
Peter Dinklage.
Oh, my gosh. We are so fired.
How about a smackerel?
Okay. All right. The film passes for me. It was a really great film. It really did emulate a lot of the heart from the original cartoons and the original film. And what I remembered as the what the story showed in each of those properties. I really did enjoy the story as a whole in this particular film. And I loved how they portrayed the characters. So they did really great. Like Spencer said, the CGI was phenomenal. It didn't look overly cartoonish. There was a sense of realism without sacrificing still the disbelief that you needed to have, the amount of disbelief you needed to have for the film. And it was fun. It was a good, fun film. I would give it a 4 out of 5. One of those being for just the red balloon that just made me want to get a red balloon after the end of the film. And for it not being an evil red balloon like from the movie It.
Wow, okay.
Hey,
so on the subject of the balloon just delighted me from the very beginning, before the balloon was even in the movie, because it was in the turning of the pages of the book in the beginning, and it harkens back to a plot that Pooh hatches in the cartoons. He paints himself black to look like a rain cloud so he can float up using a balloon, float up to where the bees have nested in the tree, and he can reach his little paw in and get all the honey that he wants, because they're not going to know that he's a bear. They're going to think that he's a rain cloud. And there's a whole song that goes with it, and it's adorable. Christopher Robin helps him, you know, paint and whatever, and he floats up. And so anyway, they did a little in the opening montage with the pages and everything. There is Pooh on a balloon, you know, holding a balloon with bees kind of around him, just mm-hmm. as a little wink. It's not part of the storyline of this movie, but then eventually they do. The physical Pooh has a physical balloon for a long time. In the film, it's a really nice landmark, almost
like a visual.
Like this is Pooh, mm-hmm. you know. I will of course pass this movie. I already went in as a super fan. The movie already passed because Pooh and Tigger were the voices that I'm used to from childhood. They would have had to do a lot of things wrong for me to fail the movie. That being said, I actually have a split score. I would say from like a filmlosopher technical perspective, I would give it 4 out of 5. Mm-hmm. I think it definitely does its job. There's a lot of richness to the visuals and to the score of the film and how it helps to tell the story in addition to the visuals and the dialogue and all of that. I thought it was very technically well crafted as a live action cartoon movie. And then I guess on a more nostalgic emotional beat, it's a total 5. Like growing up with the franchise as a kid and seeing it so many times as a youngster and kind of realizing how prominent, I guess I could say, how prominent of a role the franchise played in my own development as a human being. But you kind of, you know, you lose sight of things as you grow up, and then you look back and you're like, oh wow, that had a bigger role than I realized. This movie definitely several times had me thinking, wow, of all things, Winnie the Pooh and his friends had a much bigger role in shaping who I am than I had really realized before, even though I knew that they were, you know, kind of always around when I was a kid. But so I think on that emotional level, that nostalgia level, it's a total 5. I was very satisfied leaving the movie theater.
Awesome. Well, that about wraps up another awesome review from the film Philosophers. Again, if you have your own thoughts, if you see the film and you want to let us know your thoughts, drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmphilosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/philosophy101. Of course, like we said, this film releases tomorrow, so if you get a chance, check it out. We'd love to hear your thoughts. This is a great opportunity to talk about this film and talk about just old cartoons. I mean, who doesn't like talking about old cartoons?
I mean, what other... I don't know. Like, I just love doing this podcast sometimes where you can go from last episode was Mission Impossible Fallout, and then this episode is Christopher Robin.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. And in a few weeks, we're going to do Sharknado 6. Hello.
Yeah. Well, in the words of Winnie the Pooh, I eat honey and know things. So.
What?
I don't think.
I don't.
Any of that was accurate. No. The voice or the line itself.
It might have been a Peter Dinklage line. Yeah. I don't know.
Get Peter Dinklage out of this franchise. He doesn't belong
You're
here.
The one who said he was the CGI stand-in. Is that who Ewan McGregor was?
You said that! This episode is now over.
Oh, it is late. This was great. And yeah, this episode is over. So... from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Who is magical. Class. Get dismissed.
End it.